Successive winter storms led to critical shortages of rock salt in the U.S. Northeast on Tuesday, including Connecticut, New York, and Pennsylvania, while New Jersey scrambled to secure a huge shipment stuck at a port in Maine.
One and all, LG Grande here with you at Liberty Conspiracy Audios, listening to my last podcast that featured a really cool conversation with a really cool guy, James Bovard, and introducing this podcast. This is a terrific conversation with another great defender of freedom, our friend Stephen Smith, who has been expressing some amazing thoughts, great insights at his website, which is called A Beginner's Guide to Freedom. It is a WordPress site, so go to a beginner's guide to freedom.wordpress.com and you'll see what he has to say. In this, we look at the story that came a few days ago as people on the East Coast were fighting a nasty storm, and it turned out that the government of New Jersey and some of their political acolytes out there were starting to cry foul that the Department of Homeland Security was holding up a huge shipment of rock salt in a port in Maine. Well, we found out why that was being held up by the DHS, what great law they were upholding. And Stephen Smith took the next step. As F. Paul Wilson often says, ask the next question. Stephen Smith did. He said, why is there this rule? What forces got involved with politics to make it such that a foreign ship couldn't go from one U.S. port to another U.S. port without somehow transferring its parcel over to a ship with a U.S. flag on it? We'll find out what forces are behind this as we hear Stephen explain what he began to look into, how he started to see some parallels between this and other examples of bad political involvement in economics going back in history. Really great insight from Stephen. I hope you'll visit his website often, and especially if you look at stories and you say to yourself, shoot, man, there's so much going on. I want to see those forces that are acting behind these stories. Stephen does a great job doing that. It's a beginner's guide to freedom.wordpress.com. And I hope also you'll spread the word about this podcast. I think Stephen's insight is just terrific, and it's always a great mental refresher to be able to talk to Stephen. So, without further ado, here is this program on why rock salt was held up in New Jersey and how it not only goes back almost 100 years, but the ideas, the pernicious ideas, go back even further, back to days of mercantilism and before, when people needed to make sure they used government to stop their competition. Thanks for listening, everybody. Be seen. Great to talk to James Bovard. Oh man, he's just a really good guy. Oh, I'm all energized now, man. I was out shoveling and lifting weights and stuff, and before the show, I was like, wow, I'm getting tired. I just really put myself out there, but talking to James Bovard really gets me energized and pumped up. So thank you very much for listening, everybody, here at the Liberty Radio Network. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and this is the Liberty Conspiracy Radio Program. You can find our podcasts at Podomatic and at iTunes, and I hope you will look for those. They're free. My book is called Bite, and it's a novella. It was published in the UK. It will be out in the United States in paperback very soon. Right now in the U.S., it's a Kindle and it's a Nook. So check it out. Very cool. But I want to concentrate James Bovard's latest book. I hope you'll look for it, Public Policy Hooligan. It's very, very cool. And just the introduction is just great. It's fantastic. So definitely look for it. In fact, maybe before the end of the program, I'll share you a little something from the introduction. Right now, I want to get back to the news stories and open up the Skype line, by the way. I better do that. If you want to contact me via Skype, it's GARDNER.Goldsmith, Gardner.Goldsmith on Skype. And so feel free. Oh, there's the sound. Very cool. And we've got lots to get into, so I say that a lot. So let's start talking about it, shall we? I mentioned at the beginning of the program that I saw a terrific piece, and I'd like to share some of this piece with either in this segment or the next segment. And it's about specifically wintertime. Remember, I played Snow Miser there. Dun, 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 dun. You know that. I love that. And it's about a shipment of salt that is being held up by Homeland Security because of the rules and regulations. You know, yeah, that's right. This is just unbelievable. Check this out, all right? This one comes from CBS New York, but you can find it all over the place, and I'll draw your attention to Stephen Smith, A Beginner's Guide to Freedom, the WordPress site. This is Dateline, Jersey City, New Jersey, from CBS New York /AP. New Jersey was expected to receive a critical supply of rock salt that was held up by the Department of Homeland Security, Sieg Heil, because it was being carried on a foreign ship. Tuesday afternoon. On Tuesday afternoon, Senator Cory Booker told WCBS 880 Steve Scott. You think that's the real name? My name is Steve Scott. Steve Scott, that he and Senator Robert Menendez. Oh, absolute class act, that guy. But in this case, they have a point. I just wish that they would learn from the very system that is doing this. Senator Menendez were able to work with federal authorities to release the much-needed rock salt to the Garden State. Now, what was the problem? Why was it being held up? Why were 40,000 tons of salt hauled Maine at a Maine port? Because of the Merchant Marine Act of 1920. Hey, see, we gotta protect our ships and stuff from them foreigners who foreigner competitors out there, because there's just all that competing competitionism out there, and we can't have that. Got to protect and protect and protect. Protect other people, as they would say on The Prisoner. Remember, the P.O.P. Pop, pop, protect other people. Yeah, that is seen by many folks as being noble. But when you get government involved, the protect other people becomes exercise your own arrogance and conceit over others. That's what it is. Don't do it through government, because the only way you can do it is by assuming for people that A, they want it, and B, they must pay for it. Whatever it is, that is the source of the problem. Don't establish government for anybody's protection, because that itself is an assumption. And it's not a good thing to do.
You want it personally? You want to force somebody else to pay for it? That's another thing. So, Stephen Smith, very cool man. Stephen Smith, yeah, man, yeah, cat, dig. Stephen Smith has a great piece on this. So what I would like to do is give you some of the information that Stephen provided. If you go to A Beginner's Guide to Freedom, then you will see it. And I have to say, this guy on the ball, and I'm very glad he has been a member of the Liberty Conspiracy for quite a while. And, in fact, I'm glad he started up the Beginner's Guide to Freedom website again, because he had stopped writing, and now he's back at it. And I really hope you'll visit the website. He writes this. As regular readers, it's called The Negative Railway, hyphen, all aboard. Look for it. As regular readers are aware, the issue of protectionism fascinates me. No doubt my interest comes in part from my career, which has always been focused on international operations. Having worked alongside colleagues in Brazil, Mexico, Argentina, Canada, the Netherlands, Switzerland, the UK, Italy, Finland, Japan, Australia, and China, I've never been able to understand the protectionist mentality that runs so counter to my direct experience of mutually beneficial cross-border exchange. The notion that we are all somehow better off when forced to pay more for goods and services also runs counter to me to my everyday experience. Ceteris paribus. I prefer to pay less for like items. And given the propensity of retailers to compete specifically on price, it would appear that I am not alone in this regard. But rational behavior is precisely the kind of thing government often seeks to override, and protectionism is a great example. For some reason, most people accept this as normal, in quotes, but on occasion, even diehard statists have to wonder about the outcomes of such a policy. Three such stories hit the news this weekend. The first comes from New Jersey, which has suffered severe storms all winter. It turns out that a shipment of rock salt that is desperately needed to prepare the roads for the next blizzard is being held up in Maine. And it was only just released, folks, just to give you that quick update. The reason the 40,000 tons of salt are not already in New Jersey is that a century-old law known as the Jones Act makes it illegal for a foreign vessel to deliver goods between American ports. So the streets of New Jersey will soon be turned into an ice rink, endangering the lives of commuters throughout the state. And that's the key, folks. You rely on the government to take care of the roads. You rely on the government to protect what? Against foreign shipments of salt so that domestic salt suppliers can keep their prices higher. It's got to have, see, if it goes from a port in the U.S. to another port in the U.S., it has to have a U.S. flag. It's crazy. I'll give you more Stephen Smith's piece from A Beginner's Guide to Freedom when we return. Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio. LG Grande here with you. I'm just having a laugh, and I'll tell you why in just a minute. Wow, one of those rare things when you deal in political economics, a laugh. What? Actually, you do have to keep a sense of humor about some of this stuff. And I will let you know, if you go to see James Bovard speak at the Liberty Forum in Nashua, you will laugh a lot. He has a lot of really funny turns of phrase, excellent comments and observations, and funny stories from his experiences with government. So, please do look for his public policy hooligan book. It's on Amazon. His last name is Bovard. Okay, now, I was talking about this whole thing with the salt being held up in a Maine port thanks to a 1920s law, this maritime thing that requires that you can't have a foreign flag. If you go from one American port to another American port, you have to have an American flag. It's totally nativist. It's totally protectionist. But there are deeper things here. And as we mentioned in Stephen Smith's great piece at A Beginner's Guide to Freedom, the WordPress site, it's beginnersguidetofreedom.wordpress, beginnersguidetofreedom.wordpress.com. At this, you'll see this great piece called The Negative Railway. And there's some really serious things involved here. You know, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that they don't seem to take care of the roads as well in New Hampshire or in many New England states as I've traveled through storms and so on, as they used to when I was a kid. They clearly don't, and I know they don't. I've spoken with a woman who dates a guy who works in the plowing system in one of the towns, and they have been instructed, don't go out until after the snow has gone been falling for like a couple of hours. There are 2 or 3 inches all compacted on the ground. At the time when everybody's trying to get away from the storms, the plows aren't out. They go out afterwards. So it's essentially, you've got to understand that they're not going to help you, and you are going to, as you're paying them supposedly to clean the roads, you're going to have to just cancel your work and take time out. Now when it snows, almost all the New England states that I've found as I've been in storms, the assumption is your activities will not include going out. Everyone's going to stay in until the plows later come out. And they don't throw salt down. In some cases, some towns have been getting salt back. And this is a story from New Jersey at the Beginner's Guide to Freedom that you'll find has been on the lips of some folks. And Stephen Smith does a great job. He is with us right now. And I'd like to bring him on from California. Stephen, welcome to the program. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Great to have you here. Just turning up his mic there. And they can follow A Beginner's Guide to Freedom on Twitter. It's at ABGTF, right?
Right, at Twitter. Yes, correct.
Okay. All right, on Twitter. And Steve, rather than having me read this, why don't we turn to you? I read through a little bit about this. 40,000 tons of salt and a 100-year-old law called the Jones Act. And it deals with protectionism. Tell us your take on this.
Well, this whole thing reminded me of a story from Frederick Bastiat's Economic Sophisms from 1840. Mm. And it turns out, so there's nothing new under the sun, right?
No.
They've been fighting these kinds of protectionist impulses for forever.
Yeah.
But he described a situation in which someone was suggesting that it would be a great idea if they put a stop in a railway from Paris to Madrid. If it stopped in Bordeaux, then that would give some economic benefits to the workers in Bordeaux. And so Bastiat basically shredded the logic about this. And I thought this was a great example, a modern day example of what Bastiat referred to as the negative railway, that is a delivery system that was intentionally designed to be inefficient in the delivery of goods and services. It's specifically so government could dole out favors to a privileged minority.
Right.
And this example of the rock salt is the exact same thing. And I think it's important, as you were referencing, because many people, I think, if they think of economic liberty at all, maybe they dismiss it as being unimportant, as if it were just about getting the latest iPhone cheap.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is goods and services are necessary to human survival, and this story really illustrates how government roadblocks can actually endanger lives.
I think this is an excellent point. Can I read a little bit of one of the pertinent sections from your piece about that? Or would you like to? Yeah, folks, here, Steve writes at A Beginner's Guide to Freedom, and really, if you're interested in economics, you're interested in the way this stuff works, you have a child who's interested, go to this website. It's great. He writes, the purpose of the Jones Act was obviously to prevent foreign shippers from, quote, taking jobs from American sailors. The solution was to require a handoff from the importing vessel to a domestic vessel so that U.S. workers would be needlessly involved in the transportation, hence the negative railway. That this raises costs and increases lead times to the consumer is a feature, not a bug, that they see. And if a few New Jersey drivers get killed on the icy roads as a result, well, that's just the price they'll have to pay to feather the union's nest. And this is, we're talking real dangers here that these people are experiencing. People are at the mercy of this ridiculous government monstrosity, and they don't seem to get it.
Right. And it's sad that it takes a blizzard in New Jersey for the New York Times to recognize the pernicious effects of protectionism.
Yeah.
And sadder still that they will draw no larger lessons from their own story.
Very clear. You got a guy like Senator Menendez, who is, you know, a massive hypocrite. Here he is saying, "What? Free that up, and doesn't even realize he has voted over and over again for protectionist legislation.
Well, right. And now we have, there's a secondary example of President Obama offering to reduce the red tape involved with exports in his recent trip to Mexico, which is an indication that, you know, they recognize that protectionist policies are a problem, and yet they're still the source of those problems in the first place.
And it's yeah, absolutely right, Stephen. Sorry, go ahead.
No, and I just thought, again, it was a kind of a hypocritical or half-hearted attempt by Obama to get a headline without any real content, of course. But the article that I reference in my piece says, you know, currently U.S. businesses have to submit information to dozens of government agencies to move goods across the border. The process can take days. And as somebody who used to work in export compliance, I can attest that the rules for export are both onerous and nonsensical.
Yeah.
And they do absolutely nothing to benefit the consumer.
And yet it's amazing, because there is an entire legal framework behind this, and billions of dollars a year spent in, if you just want to pick just a few countries, it's probably trillions if you look all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Just to comply with all these things that have been built up, this tarnish that has been built up on human exchange. It's incredible.
Right. And when I worked in export compliance, it became apparent very quickly that it's very important in that role to think carefully about the rules and the regulations, but not deeply. Because as soon as you start thinking deeply about them, you realize that you are just following rules for the sake of following rules.
That's an excellent distinction.
Again, there is no value whatsoever to the consumer. It is functionally a make-work program for government bureaucrats so that they don't have to actually produce anything in the private sector.
That this is very important, and I personally know that there have been accidents on New Hampshire roads because they have not salted. I think it's not just lackluster work; it's malfeasance on the part of the politicians and the people who run these things to assume for you that they will run the roads and then not do the job. And then assume that you're somehow supposed to understand that you're not supposed to go out at certain times. They're just not going to be there,
right.
and people's lives are put at risk. It's really troubling to me to see how people accept this sort of stuff. And I think one of the only ways to show people that they're wrong or is through education and examples like this. And I really like the fact that you trace this all the way back to Bastiat's Economic Sophisms, which is an amazing collection. It's great, folks. And The Negative Railway. I mean, it's just a brilliant, brilliant thought, Stephen. Really smart.
Well, you know, you can read the Bastiat collection or just Economic Sophisms. And you will understand more about economics than if you had read every textbook by Paul Krugman or Paul Samuelson put together.
All right, we'll return. Liberty Conspiracy Radio.
It's an omen.
We'll be right back.
We return Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network, and I'm very pleased that we have the opportunity to continue chatting with our friend Stephen Smith. And Stephen, you were just telling us a little bit about how this story from New Jersey and the 40,000 tons of rock salt that were being held up by a 1920s law that forced foreign shippers to have to ship to an American port, and then if they wanted to bring this to another American port, it had to be dealt with through Americans, that this attempt to give Americans more work actually is economically destructive. And you traced it all the way back to great insights from Frederick Bastiat. We were just coming into our commercials there, so I wanted to let you sort of continue with the conversation.
This issue is not unique to shipping via maritime shipping. We also had the same thing in the trucking industry with NAFTA for a long time, where Mexican trucks were only allowed to drive a certain number of miles into the United States. Then they had to hand it over to U.S. truckers.
I remember
for
that.
The very same reasons.
Yes, yes. Has that been? Is that? Do you know if that's still extant?
I believe it has changed somewhat, although I can't quote with any specificity as to exactly how.
Right.
I know it was a big issue, a big source of contention when that sort of grace period, if you will, was about to expire after NAFTA. The American truckers were very much upset about the idea that Mexican truckers were going to be able to drive through the United States.
Now, just to pause you there, and I know I'm injecting real quick, but economically, what is the lesson behind this? If people say, if they had heard that back then, then probably a lot of people would have nodded and said, yeah, man, these Mexican truckers, they work for a lot less. They can be hired up here. They can bring stuff in. They should be working. There should be work made for Americans here. They should have to offload their stuff to American truckers. That will employ all these American truckers.
Right, and now we're getting into another Bastiat truism, which is that which is seen and that which is not seen, right? The idea that we can all be made better and more for the goods and services that we need is a fallacy, because people see what you see is an American trucker or American dock worker getting a job. What you don't see are all the goods and services that would have been demanded had people been able to retain their money because they had gotten the goods or services that they need at the lowest possible price.
Right.
They wouldn't have just set it on fire. They would have gone out and bought other things that would have employed other people in other ways,
right.
and in ways that the market actually preferred, rather than the ways that in which were politically expedient for certain people to, again, line the pockets of their of potential voters, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
But to draw, again, going back to Bastiat and his seemingly his prescience. Again, he was just talking about the things that were going on in his lifetime, but very little has changed, and just illustrates how we have to keep refuting bad ideas over and over again. But when he was talking about all of this, he again gave an example, and he said, between Paris and Brussels, obstacles of many kinds exist. First of all, there is distance, which entails loss of time, and we must either submit to this ourselves or pay another to submit to it. Then come rivers, marshes, accidents, bad roads, which are so many difficulties to be surmounted. We succeed in building bridges, in forming roads, and making them smoother by pavements, iron rails, etc. But all of this is costly, and the commodity must be made to bear the cost. Then there are the robbers who infest the roads, and a body of police must be kept up, etc. Now, among these obstacles, there is one which we have ourselves set up, and at no little cost, too, between Brussels and Paris. There are men who lie in ambuscade along the frontier, armed to the teeth, and whose business it is to throw difficulties in the way of transporting merchandise from one country to the other. They are called customs house officers, and they act in precisely the same way as ruts and bad roads. And so his point is, these protectionist tariffs, they are putting up obstacles in the way of free trade, which exist to benefit individuals. And it doesn't really matter if one individual is in France and the other is in Belgium, or one is in the United States or one is in China, or if I'm in California and you're in New Hampshire. It's all just putting up barriers needlessly. And the way I think about it, and maybe I pulled this from another Bastiat example, imagine if you lived in a small town. You could be self-sufficient or kind of have an autarkical type economy where you make everything yourself. But that's a road to poverty, and everybody understands that.
Yeah.
And let's say there's one road leading into and out of your town, and through that road you can get the goods, you can trade for the goods and services you need from the next town over or the next county over or whatever. Well, all of this protectionism, all these protectionist policies are basically akin to cutting down a tree and laying it over the road to make it more difficult to get those goods and services.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Absolutely right. I love the way that Bastiat expresses this, and the way that you express it is clearly a modern take, you know, another person, not a modern take, but another person's take to express it in just that way. I love the way you guys, the way you do it, the way he does it, because it's very understandable. These are obstacles that don't have to exist.
Right.
And they're done for all sorts of, you know, a lot of rationales are provided for these things. And I think one of the things that we have to try to overcome, Stephen, when we talk about this is the person or persons who will feel the direct benefit, the trucker who will get mm-hmm. that job, mm-hmm. The person who will see some product from another country become higher priced so that his product might be purchased more often by domestic consumers. And for us, we have to try to get through to those particular people who will then talk to the politician to say, continue with this, or they'll push for more to say, no, you're hurting people. And we have to approach all the other folks who outnumber those people and say, please recognize what's going on. You know, to those people who it directly aids, whom it directly aids, I don't know how many of those people are arguments will find any sort of resonant frequency with.
No, almost none.
And it's really a shame because they're seeing a direct benefit. It's positive for them, and they're not thinking about all the other things that are being lost to all the other people out there. And so I don't know whether they even consider the ethics of it or the morality of it, but to them it's a positive thing because
right.
that trucker's getting more work or whatever. It's difficult for all the other people because, as public choice economists have noted, out of their pockets, it's only a few more pennies per day.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can show them the aggregate, if you can show them the nonsensical nature of it and how it harms everybody, how there would be so much more business that they could do, they could buy so many more things if these barriers were just brought down. It really does. I think it's a beautiful thing to try to do. It's a peaceful thing to try to do, to show them what's missing. And, you know, you and I are speaking about writing in this field and how it can become a very frustrating thing because it's often negative. You're trying to defend and you're bringing up the negative. But I think in a way, you know, with your subtle touch and your examples, it's more of an educational thing. It's like you're a teacher, you know?
Yeah. And, again, going back to the idea that this is not inconsequential. The economic liberties go directly to the quality of life for people all over the world. And it's easy to talk about the United States where, you know, frankly, things are pretty still, despite all of our problems, things are comparatively pretty good.
Yeah.
But I go to, you know, I spend a lot of time in Brazil. And Brazil, although it is considered a developing country, comparatively, it's still very poor. And the protectionist policies there are one of the main things, in my opinion, that keeps it poor.
Really?
Oh, my goodness. I've been at meetings. I remember a trip to Miami for a work function, and my Brazilian coworkers were meeting me in Miami. And after work, we'd go out and we went out shopping because the Brazilians always want to go shopping when they're here. Huh. Well, why do they want to do that? Because things are crazy expensive in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to some sporting goods store in the mall, and they walk by a pair of Nike shoes, $60 pair of Nikes in the United States. They go, that would cost $300 in Brazil.
Oh man!
And don't you remember? And I know this for a fact. My company sells shoes like hotcakes in Brazil because they're very protectionist.
Yeah.
The domestic price is through the roof. But you think about that $300 to the average Brazilian. It's a pair of shoes. So $300 for a pair of Nikes that would cost us $60. That's a lot of goods and that's a lot of other goods and services like food,
rent,
a car payment. Very important basic needs that are must be foregone just so they can afford a pair of shoes. Because what people when people think of protectionism, they think of it as protecting domestic industry. But in reality, what it's doing is it is giving domestic industry a monopoly privilege to charge higher than market rates in the domestic. So it's not as though we protect the Brazilian shoe industry and they make a $20 pair of shoes and they pay, and they charge you $20. They make the $20 pair of shoes and they charge you $200 because the import version is going to cost you $300.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I think a lot of people lose sight. It's great if you're the in a very unethical and selfish way. If you're the Brazilian shoemaker who is aligned with the Brazilian government and is getting the benefit of these protections, to your point, you've got a huge incentive to fight to maintain those.
Absolutely.
But if but the cost of that protection is diffused across the entire consumer base, and the individual consumer has much less incentive to argue against those same kinds of protections. But again, it's when you talk about the very basic goods and services that people need to make their lives better, these are not inconsequential issues.
No, they're. I'm glad you stated it that way. They are not inconsequential, and for people who understand that these have moral implications, they can also go beyond that to say the betterment of people's lives it can occur once those matters of subsistence are taken care of. When you have a competitive market, the matters people look at for their basic existence will be the first things they often will try to go for, and the competitive market will bring the prices down on those, and that frees up the more of their money. And new things can be created, new investments in these companies that are creating these new things, whatever it might be, a new form of coffee maker, a new type of shovel, whatever, a new type of rain slicker or something, a new type of sun lotion or something, anything like these new developments, they can't be brought about because the protectionist policies exist to protect those businesses that are already out there and have their ties to the government and are getting that extra money that could be spent on these new things. And that's a real sad thing when I think about generations behind me, you know, because, you know, there are young people in Brazil right now whose lives 10, 20, 30 years from now could be so much better.
Right.
But the opportunity for that extra capital to be leveraged is being taken away by those policies. It's a real shame. And here in the United States, billions of dollars a year are taken away because of that. And it is not better that they're spent on those old types of businesses, because those old types of businesses want those barriers put up because they can't compete.
Right.
And that is significant. If they could compete, they wouldn't need the barriers. And
right.
that ought to tell you something, folks. Inefficiency is being propped up by political means. So, yeah. Well, listen, Stephen, thanks. This has been awesome.
Oh, anytime.
Yeah, what a show. So cool. man, wow. This is great. So, listen, I'm going to put this out as a podcast. I've got a bunch of podcast work I've got to do. It's been absolutely crazy. And let me see. I'm just looking at my schedule tomorrow. I'm thinking about what I need to do. I got to go to PT tomorrow for a while. And I want to get over to Liberty Forum, but I don't think I'm going to make it over there tomorrow afternoon. But I'll try to get this out as a podcast. We've had other conversations. I want to make sure I get everything out as much as possible. And to the listeners out there, please go to A Beginner's Guide to Freedom. .wordpress.com, because I think you'll really like it and you'll want to go there. Stephen, as you and I discussed, you can get burned out writing about these types of things. So, Stephen, as you mentioned, your approach is to try to be positive, educating, and things like that, right?
That's what I'm going to try to do.
Yeah.
We'll see how well I succeed.
Okay. All right. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. I'm going to end the recording right now. We've gone over time on the recording for the show. And so you want to see be seeing you? Go ahead if you want.
Be seeing you.
All right.